The pair of words Good Friday, the Friday before Easter, means this to the people in the UK and Ireland.
The idea that if one side wins something in Northern Ireland, the other loses, is gone. The essence of what we have agreed is a choice. We are all winners or all losers. It is mutually assured benefit or mutually assured destruction.
In 1998, Prime Minister Tony Blair's words signifying the Good Friday Agreement ended 30 years of sectarian strife in Northern Ireland, a milestone of settled history, but a controversy over an oral history project at Boston College is now threatening to unravel that history. Boston College's attempt to document the historical truth of the unrest in Northern Ireland went awry in May of this year when police seized some of the archive and used its contents as grounds to arrest Sinn Féin leader Gerry Adams in connection with a murder dating back to 1972. Adams was released from British authorities without charge, but not without raising questions about academic freedoms and whether old hatreds can ever really be put to rest. Boston Globe columnist Kevin Cullen has been talking to former IRA veterans for his latest piece for the paper. Kevin, welcome.
Thanks, John.
And Boston College spokesman Jack Dunn, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So, Jack, how did this, oral history project evolve originally? What was its intent?
Sure. After the Good Friday Agreement was signed in 1998, a scholar from Ireland approached Boston College and said it would be a great idea to record the histories of people who had been involved in the Troubles. Boston College's Burns Library is internationally acclaimed as the leading repository of materials Irish. And after the Good Friday Agreement of 1998, there was a general consensus in Northern Ireland that people wanted to move away from the tumultuous past, away from the divide, and embrace peace and reconciliation, and that this project would go to great lengths in furthering that sense of peace and reconciliation that emerged after the Good Friday Agreement.
And part of that sense of reconciliation is that we think of this somehow as settled history. Kevin, how did that fit with those you spoke with on the ground in Belfast?
What I tried to accomplish on the ground in Belfast was not to beat up B.C. I guess B.C. could be accused of maybe naivete at this point, but I think that the genesis of the idea, the project, I think was very valid. And the one thing I must say, coming back from Belfast, having talked to the people that gave these disputed interviews, they feel a bit estranged from the whole Republican movement. These are guys who, you know, spent many, many years in prison, who did things that they're not necessarily proud of now looking back. They committed acts of violence, and while they believe they were justified in committing those acts of violence, they think that there was a bit of folly to the whole idea of the war that they launched and the war that they carried out for the Irish Republican Army. And they believe that their histories, if not for this project, would never be told, would never be recorded, because they are sort of outside the mainstream Republican movement. They are not part of Sinn Féin. They are not on good terms with the Sinn Féin leadership, and they feel that Sinn Féin is trying to control the narrative, that how history will be told. And that's the real subplot I picked up on the ground in Northern Ireland, that this is as much a struggle, not over just an archive, but a struggle over who gets to tell the story of what happened in what the Irish, in their penchant for understatement, call the Troubles.
Now, what is your understanding of how Northern Ireland police and, essentially British authorities got a hold of some of this testimony and turned it into a prosecution leader that motivated the arrest and questioning of Sinn Féin leader Gerry Adams?
Well, I mean, it was in Ed Maloney's book that was published several years ago. That's when they would have found out about it. I mean, I'm a columnist, so I am paid to engage in opinion. And my opinion from the beginning has been that this was a cynical exercise by the police in Northern Ireland, ostensibly going after these records, going after academic research, was on the basis that it contained information about the murder of Jean McConville in 1972, one of the most horrific crimes ever committed in the Troubles. She was a widowed mother of 10. She was dragged from her house by an IRA gang. With her children literally clinging to her legs, she was abducted, she was murdered, and she was secretly buried. Now, as I've written before over the years, it's very interesting that with all the things that were in the BC archive, the only thing that the police were interested in was something that happened to implicate the leader of the largest nationalist party in Northern Ireland. That is political on its nature. Now, the other part of this is that, you know, the British authorities requested this information under a treaty that the U.S. and U.K. had signed. And there's clearly exemptions for political issues in this treaty. And this prosecution in the McConville case, all of these prosecutions that could arise out of these stuff that was done by the BC Oral History Project, they are by their nature political. They are political offenses. And everybody, I think, would acknowledge that. But now the police have said they want the entire archive. And from the beginning, it's always struck me as very unreasonable that an American institution of higher learning would be a proxy investigator for a foreign law enforcement agency. It makes no sense. And I think the police should have been told from the very beginning, you're going after political stuff. The American government invested untold political capital. George Mitchell spent 5 years of his life over there. And this thing that the police are trying to do over there is in direct violation, contradicts American foreign policy for the last 20 years. It makes no sense to me.
So what are the lessons of all this? Jack, what's the takeaway here? The U.S. and the U.K. have what's called a mutual legal assistance treaty, an MLAT agreement, as it does with many countries, something that's meant to be of mutual benefit. In reality, how does that play after all you've been through at Boston College?
The takeaway is that people will be reluctant to conduct oral history projects in those countries that have MLAT obligations with the United States. Once again, the MLAT treaty was in existence in 1996, and it was that treaty that the PSNI, Police Services of Northern Ireland, invoked in getting the Department of Justice to issue the subpoenas to Boston College.
And Kevin, your takeaway?
Well, my takeaway, like I said, the purpose of my story was not really to rehash a lot of these issues. It was really to go on and get on the ground in Belfast and get a sense of what is going on. And my takeaway is that this is sort of a microcosm of the trouble in Ireland of reconciling the past, of dealing with it. They do not have an official truth and reconciliation process such as we saw in South Africa. So they're doing it piecemeal. The armed struggle has been replaced with a legacy struggle. And people that fought the war, they want to tell their version of it. And again, I think that is a valuable contribution to our understanding of what happened during the Troubles.
Kevin Cullen, Boston Globe columnist, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Also, thanks to Boston College spokesman Jack Dunn. Thank you very much, Jack.
Thanks for having us, John.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.